Hey, y'all, it's Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. Ever order furniture online and wonder, what if? Like, what if it doesn't fit?
Little to the left. No, wait!
Yep, should have gone with Wayfair. Or what if it doesn't hold up?
That sofa was 4 days old.
Should have ordered from Wayfair. Or what if it's that material that makes that noise?
It was a sofa, I swear.
With Wayfair, there's no what if. Just style you love, quality you can trust, and furniture that actually fits your life. Visit Wayfair.com or download the Wayfair app.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
It's time for KNC.
What?
The real KNC.
It's called the only KNC now, right?
Best producers in the market.
Morning show producers.
Curtis and Ken, I love those guys very much.
Podcast stars.
Oh, how do you not know that? And you'd be like, Curtis, idiot.
Lumpy. Come on, Lumpy.
Lumpster, you moron.
And now.
5:30 a.m., the real KNC to live radio every Monday, a half hour before the show.
Live on the air?
Live on the air. 93.7.
This place is going to drop in ratings.
Ken Laird and Chris Curtis on your radio.
I think it's a bad idea.
Here's Ken.
Can I just say something to you, Ken?
Yes, you can.
I love you.
And Chris.
Ken and Curtis aren't adults. They are sycophants. Both of them will try to make me look like an ass.
On Sports Radio WEEI.
Well, it's taken 3 years, but I'm finally a star. I showed up after 5 a.m. this morning. This was the first time. I think I showed up at 5 a.m. once before you came back. After you know, the drunk Curtis, then we had the hiatus. You were gone for, what, 3 months?
Right, then you had sober Paul with you.
I had sober, I had Paul with me.
Right.
And I had to call in once, and I was in the Curtis role, and I showed up at 5, and it was okay. I kind of made it through. But you have to, if you don't get here, normally we get here at about 4:15, 4:30 latest.
Right.
You know, 4:15, 4:30, somewhere in that range. And now that you and I are doing the Monday show, my goal is to be here no later than 4. 4:40 or so, I wake up like in a cold sweat. You know, it was late night, of course. Bruins celebration going on at my house. My daughter and I were high fiving at 11:30.
Maya
last
was
night.
Tweeting up a storm last night.
Yeah,
outraged that the Post Dispatch was tweeting out celebratory ads.
Okay, we'll get back to that. But so, you know, I stroll in here at 5. We got the great John Anderson, an up and coming star here at the WEI, helping us out. So our open is not yet done for the 6 o'clock show.
That's correct. I was just working on an office element for the last 10 minutes and ran in here down the hall.
Yeah, which is it's a work of passion of yours because Pam was featured in between periods last night. And we have the great John Krasinski drop Curtis, keep your pants on. That was very much in effect last night as you were watching
Got
Jenna Fisher.
Got me exactly where I needed to be. That was first intermission.
Need to hear that.
And that was the questions by the crew from NBC were abhorrent. That was
Milbury was pretty good. Like at least he got a character. He asked about a Dwight question.
Who's the guy in the far right? The tall guy. He asked about the party planning committee.
Was it Keith Jones?
Yeah,
I think it was Jonesy.
It was awful. It was like some producer was feeding him, like, ask about the parties.
No, see, now it's still office hardo. Curtis is going to get upset at Keith Jones because he didn't get the party
question. If I can be a hardo on one thing, I've seen every episode at least 5 times. It is The Office, and have a couple good questions ready. My God.
Well, Milbury had one good one.
Yeah, Milbury was fine. He's from Boston. The Office cast is from Boston, but she was awful too. I mean,
well, she was nervous and she was reeling. That was when Liam asked her about the St. Louis or the Post Dispatch putting out that release.
But here's
that you're
the easiest question you have there. There's the most famous Michael Scott, or among the most famous Michael Scott lines of all time. He says, "I'm not superstitious. I'm a little stitious." So you ask,
well,
that
why
question,
didn't she pull that out?
Well, she was nervous. That's not her job. It's the NBC family. They should have had a question. You know, your old boss, Michael Scott, might have been a little uneasy with the St. Louis Post-Dispatch.
I'm not superstitious, but I am a little stitious.
Oh, there it is. Right.
Nice.
John Anderson nailed it in 2 seconds. The NBC crew couldn't find that for 5 minutes. But, oh, well.
Well, this is a good point by you. I'm trying to find this on our text. It's not a Slack channel, but me, you, and Mutt have like an chat, whatever you
right. We tell Mutt what to say, and he says, okay.
So there was some conversation about the Pam spot there. Mutt was very happy that Milbury went to White. But you were very upset, I think, that the here's the tweet. The Office is no longer cool.
Right.
That's the text from Curtis, which is totally accurate. I mean, they jumped the shark years ago. Even toward the end of the Office itself, you stopped watching, didn't you?
The final seasons of The Office were not great, but it sort of had this renaissance because of Netflix. There's a younger generation that didn't really see it, so now it's, I think, the second most viewed show on Netflix because people have just sort of, it's like Arrested Development in a way.
Yeah.
People have gotten back into it that missed the heyday of it.
Mm.
But it is just the tweets about it, the questions, Jenna Fischer's performance last night, all of it was just awful. Now you know John Krasinski.
Yeah, he's gonna,
they're going to play that up for the first period. It's just a brutal, brutal job by NBC.
But the bottom line is Game 7 Wednesday night here. Dale is 6 to midnight.
Oh,
you are
God.
Not thrilled that we have hockey talk for 4 more days. I mean, you've done well navigating the waters, best you can. But,
best I can.
But in general, you're sour. You're sour that the Boston media, you're sour that the Bruins are at the forefront yet again.
I grew up in this town. I used to think that the media's job was to unearth uncomfortable, interesting stories about the teams that we liked, right? So the different conversation than the living room when you're watching the game, cheering on the team. The people covering the team's job was to find out the juicy information, find out things that were going to agitate the players, you know, all of that. And now I see it. And yesterday, a bar in St. Louis was rented out before the game for the Blues to use to celebrate in the event that they won. And you would have thought they were, you know, going to have Bin Laden's kid be the banner captain. I mean, it was like the way Twitter reacted to that. Like, what do you expect them to do?
You don't mean Twitter. You mean local media.
The local media
Twitter
members
reaction.
On Twitter, the Bruins media Twitter, reacted as though they were found that they were kidnapping Bruce Cassidy's daughter in, you know, before the game. It was unbelievable. Who cares? And why wouldn't they rent out a bar?
Okay, but as far as the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, this was like an e-edition, right, that got out that this was a letter from the chairman to fans, you know, thanking them for their support, and the cup parade was discussed.
Do you think that there was advertisements in the Los Angeles Times ready to print in the event the Rams beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl? Do you think the local In-N-Out Burger, Mutt's favorite place, had an ad ready to go in the LA Times in the event that the Rams beat the Patriots?
Okay, but it's a story. You're saying it shouldn't be covered or
no,
shouldn't be discussed?
No, but it's not an outrage. Everybody in the media knows that there's packages done beforehand in the event of either outcome. It's not like the Blues are sitting there saying, look, we don't think the Bruins can beat us. We are already planning our party after the game. Look at the local businesses have already invested money in an ad. You think that at 11 o'clock last night, they're all of a sudden going to sit down at a meeting and be like, what are we going to write in our ad? The Blues just won it all. Holy crap, we have to do that now.
All right, but this goes back to, you know, the Steelers in 2001 had already planned their trip to New Orleans and the Super Bowl.
Well, that's
and
the Eagles because Fourier was sitting there in the front row. He ate that whole thing up because he's a dummy. But, I mean, I think that, of course, that's used. That's what that's the difference. Bill Belichick is the head coach of the New England Patriots. He is to find any perceived slight against his team to rally them up because his job is to win games, and he views that as a means to motivate his team. It is not Dale Arnold's job as a Bruins reporter to find out and seek out stories that will motivate the team.
He didn't seek it out. Somebody had, it was on social media, and it was a retweet.
So do you think it was a big deal? Do you think it was something that, as a media member, you should be
out there? They brought it up on the NBC Sports telecast last night.
It's not the job of the media to rally up the team.
Well,
but it's become. Twitter has caused everybody.
Dale didn't rally up the team,
did
he?
Oh, my God. Twitter.
Give me an example. Give me an example. Besides Twitter. Give me Dale tweeted about it.
Dale tweeted about it. I couldn't. Joe McDonald. I'm sure all the local Bruins beat guys just put Bruins media into one tent. They view their job as to rally the Bruins to say, "Oh, the Blues suck. The refs are out to get us." They're, you know, embellishment.
Well,
this
the refs are out to get them.
It's a joke.
It was a good
this
job
town
last night
has
by
turned
Dwyer.
Into a college town. It's like we're Columbus, Ohio, the way people view these teams. It's embarrassing. I mean, okay, question for you, Ken.
Yep.
Do you think if the Bruins media knew what happened with Tuukka Rask, do you think members of the Bruins media know why Tuukka Rask missed those games earlier this season?
Oh, the personal leave?
Right.
That's, I don't think so.
Okay, let me ask you a different question. Do you think if they knew and it was damaging for Tuukka Rask, they would be less likely to go public with it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
If the Bruins knew the same exact story, let's say Joe McDonald knew why Tuukka Rask was absent and it's because of whatever, a personal issue with, I'm not going to speculate, but let's say it was a damaging personal issue mm-hmm. for Tuukka Rask, and he had the exact same information about Binnington last week, Do you think he would go forward with news that was damaging to the opponent's team's goaltender instead of using it against Tuukka Rask?
I don't know. It depends on what it was. If it's a domestic, a legal issue that got swept under the rug, I think...
I'm saying not legal. I'm saying damaging personal information.
Something
about his home life.
They'd be more likely, yes. I'll grant you that. More likely to go
with
it.
They're keepers of the gate. I mean, I go back even to 2011. Like, these stories get... Like, Seth Wickersham, we'll use that example. The national media reports aggressively about the local teams, and then the local media responds by attacking the reporter who addressed the stories that were damaging about the local team. It should be the opposite.
Here's all Dale said. Somebody said, heard through the St. Louis grapevine, the Blues have the entire top floor of a downtown bar rented out for tonight. Stanley Cup celebrations are planned. And Dale said, it would be a real shame to mess those plans, wouldn't it?
Oh, God. It'd be a real shame to mess those plans, wouldn't it? Like, what sweater were you wearing when you tweeted that, Dale?
That wasn't so bad. That's not bad.
It's the whole thing. It's just the way we cover this. We've
You're
all become
triggered.
Dan
You're
Roach.
Easily triggered. You're upset Dale's having success. And Dale
How is Dale having success?
He keeps working. Look at all this extra work he's got.
Oh, financially, yes. Great. I'm sure Dale is doing great.
He's rolling. His book. Did you see his picture? He tweeted out a picture of the book. Was right by Harlan Coben on the top shelf of a bookstore in Maine. This weekend.
I hope Dale sells a million books. It's a wonderful thing. The coffee cup got mentioned last night. I think it's a great story. The Bruins are doing phenomenally. Boston's about to win its third title in a row. That's spectacular. I just find the media's coverage of the Bruins, of the Red Sox, of the Patriots in general, there is nobody in this town that is seeking out information that may hurt or may cause issues with players
within
these locker
rooms. You want them to expose Tuukka's home life.
No, I just want them to cover the team, not cheer for it. I don't know when Boston became this, but when I grew up, Jerry Callahan famously cited Loserville. People ripped the players in this town. They ripped the GMs. The toughest job in Boston was to be the manager of the Red Sox. Now being the manager of the Red Sox is the easiest gig in Boston. Alex Cora can
do
no wrong.
Well, you and Jerry are the biggest Brady fanboys around, so you want to talk about embarrassing.
Okay.
There you go.
Do you think that there's a difference between saying that Tom Brady's the greatest of all time and flipping out because some bar in downtown St. Louis was rented out because the St. Louis Blues are one win away from winning a Stanley Cup?
Yeah, but I listened to you talk to Brady off the air on Mondays when he calls in. Oh, man, is that a little creepy?
I knew you were going to go there, and it's a great point. Tom Brady is the greatest of all time.
Well, Jerry will be right with you. We'll get you on right away.
Saying that Tom Brady is the greatest of all time is a little bit different from sitting there watching the Bruins game wearing an I Have Brady shirt and begging them to close the bars that the Blues had rented out.
Is that what Dale had on last night?
Oh, my God. He was tweeting out selfies, sending them to me as texts.
Well, we've gone off track here now. This is week two of the pre-show. It's Laird and Curtis. We're live, 5:30. You can call us, 617-779-7937, if you'd care to. We haven't taken a call yet on the pre-show. We haven't had a call yet.
We had all banked lines last week. We had a break.
Yeah. But we have the open is not done yet. So this is sad. Because I was late and I'm a big star, I spent almost 20 hours in a Red Sox booth with Joe Castiglione this weekend. It was 80 degrees in the booth, mind you. And the baseball was mostly putrid. But I'm a star. I mean, plus Sunday skate. Plus, I've been on some kind of major heater, as they call it now, with my Coleman prediction
what
last week.
What a job by you.
7D, I was on that. I told you Chara was going to play right from the jump when Fourier was saying Dunsky. So I've got it all right now.
You've been on top of it. And I take back ripping the local media, because listening to the 20 hours that you did with TC and Castig,
well,
God,
chemistry
the things
there.
They were saying about the Red Sox, killing Cora, ripping Dombrowski, saying they should sell the team. I thought Castig was out of line.
How about me in the pregame, those electric spots with me and... McAdam.
Mutt's killing your pregame via text.
Yeah, well, it was a little dry.
I've listened to his relic spots. They were not great, Mutt.
That's a fair point. Okay, now we'll have an update on David Ortiz coming up. And Reamer was rattled this weekend. It's the pre-show, the pre-Mutt and Callahan. It's the only KNC in Sports Radio WEI.
This is Mutt and Callahan on Sports Radio WEI.
I'm Lori Grandy. Now back to Ken Laird and Chris Curtis live on WEI.
Back to more of Mutt and Callahan on Sports Radio WEI.
I'm 26 years old and have regular time on a major station. I'm doing just fine. My career is doing fine. I was on the morning show. I was 23. I was in. It was great. I was going to be in 1 hour. I was in for 2 hours. I was a regular from that point on. So I've done nothing but succeed at a very high level so far in my career.
Just a little glimpse of Reamer over the weekend. A rattled Alex Reamer. It's segment two of the pre-show. The only KNC. Ken Laird.
Chris Curtis.
We are with you Monday mornings, 5:30 to 6. We're so big, Wiggy can't even come in studio. Wiggy's in the producer's chair right now. By the way, Lori Grandy giving us the live toss back. Our girl, Lori. We love that. Thank you, Lori. We're big now. We're superstars. Game 7 coming up Wednesday. I'd just like to say selfishly, for me, this is 10 years to the day, June 12th, after I covered a Game 7 Penguins at Red Wings Cup Final Game 7 at Joe Louis Arena. So I think that's just cool personally. I get to cover a second Game 7. I'll be there.
Awesome.
For us.
Wait, maybe behind the pole?
Yeah, behind the pole. But you have a chance to get on the ice, which is always just total chaos. So 10 years ago, I'm covering the Penguins. They win on the road. Max Talbot scores both goals.
Well, you have to get past the autograph line with Haggerty and Dale that are, you know, after the game.
Oh, it was insane. There were like players' wives and girlfriends screaming at security to let them on the ice, and it was just total madness. But anyway, I get on the ice, and I'm trying to talk to the guy who scored both goals in Game 7, and he starts screaming at me, "Get the F out of my face. I don't want to answer questions right now." It was total banana lands.
What?
But he didn't want to talk to the media, which it's awkward. You know, you're there after a championship, whatever. Anyway. More about that later, or maybe no more about that later.
I was in this studio after the Bruins' last Stanley Cup. DA and I went on until 6 a.m. on Brand X.
Live overnight?
Live overnight.
Ooh, we should do that again.
Yes.
Ken and Curtis overnight.
Oh, you and I, yeah.
Yeah. Wednesday. I'll be up anyway. Calvin's in St. Louis. He posted, everything's going to be all right yet again. He just posted the same column again. Want to give a David Ortiz update before we get back to Reamer. And boy, was Reamer rattled this weekend. Was that a thing of beauty? But David Ortiz, as you probably heard by now, was shot in the Dominican last night in his hometown of Santo Domingo at an amusement center is what they called it. I don't really know what that means. Maybe it's a bar or like a...
I assume it's a nightclub bar type area.
The Sox released a statement that David's family confirmed he sustained the gunshot wound to the lower back and the abdominal region. He is recovering after surgery at Clinica Abel Gonzalez in Santo Domingo. He is in stable condition and is expected to be okay per his agent, Fernando Cusa. And David's father, Leo, told reporters no organs were affected. The doctors anticipate a full recovery. So that is great news so far from what we're hearing from David Ortiz. Now, to Reamer. It's Wiggy Week. We have Wiggy in all week. A decision made collectively by the Brain Trust here.
Correct.
Mostly Chris Curtis, who's the executive producer.
Right.
But I support you fully because we believe in Wiggy. We like Wiggy. We want to give Wiggy a little reward. He's been calling for it. He's been good. Ratings have been high when he's been in. We think consistency might help here, and we're going to try it out. We're going to see how it goes. We're going to rate every show this week, you and I personally. I don't know if we'll give it like a number, like a numeric.
I think 1 out of 10.
Okay, 1 out of 10. We'll give it a 10 after the show. We're going to collect these results by the end of the week. Now, he's turned down the Friday appearance, I think, because of the son's graduation, so he's going to be docked points for that.
The only graduation that starts at 6 a.m.
Right. It's a little odd, but okay, so that's fine. But I appreciate that Wiggy put the screws to Reamer big time yesterday. And at first, Reamer had this attitude like, I'm not participating in this. He was very...
Well, at first, Reamer sounded like drunk Curtis. God, he was out late, showed up right before the broadcast, was totally out of it.
That's another thing. 8:59, I'm heard. He showed up 1 minute before the start of the broadcast, which he shouldn't be on Sunday mornings. He doesn't want to be on Sunday mornings. His attitude sucks, quite frankly, and he should just be stripped off that show. I like Reamer. It's not picking on him, but he doesn't want to be there, so why is he there? I think it's a bad look.
I agree, and the tonality of Reamer yesterday just got to me. I was listening to the show. I listen every week. And he talks about the issues he's had at WEEI as though someone is out to get him. Like, the boogeyman keeps popping up and causing him to miss time on the air or get banned from shows or to have issues off the air because of things he said. And it's like there's no accountability. It's a bizarre tone. It's like the thing with me, you know, he immediately pivoted on the air and yelled at Kirk, like, you know, like, didn't take accountability for that when he had his parole hearing.
I've bled out for this station.
And then he says, like, you know, like last year, it's like everything that these were all your doing. I never wanted you to get fired. You shouldn't have been fired. I'm happy you're on the air. I like you at WEEI. But it's just an odd route to take saying that.
The victim card.
You're a victim. You're not a victim. You did those things. People got outraged, right or wrong. The radio station made decisions for the best interest of the company at the time to protect key assets at WEEI. You weren't fired. You kept here. You were here. You got a paycheck. You just got a new contract. And it's like he's this aggrieved party. It's a bizarre way to attack the situation.
But I'm not going to dance on command so they have audio to replay in the morning.
Yeah, so that was the attitude early. Now, John Anderson, who's running the board for us now, was in for that show. Didn't you find it interesting, John, like by the course of the show, he changed a little bit. Like Bradford called in And he seemed to lighten up a little bit afterwards. And somehow Bradford was missed on the show, I thought.
I thought very much.
In a weird
way. I didn't anticipate that, but Bradford should get a raise.
Yeah, I mean, so he called in and maybe that lightened Reamer up. I don't know.
But when Wiggy calls Reamer, I think Alex just kind of shuts down a little. I think he gets sick of it
totally
after a while.
Took the ball and
he's just,
home.
He's just done fighting it.
I know. Like, where's the fight? I mean, and so he's not going to dance for us. This is not like we're not trying to poke Reamer. We want to see how Wiggy does for the week.
I have never been a bigger fan of Wiggy than I am right now. I want Wiggy to kick ass this week, have a great week of shows, and then Reamer really has I think he sort of felt like with the new show, with Kirk gone, he doesn't have to sort of be as edgy, as prepared, as I don't know what the term is, but he's missing that sort of like desperation that made him such a key character on the old show. Like, I think he's comfortable. Too comfortable.
Well, he's put in a request. He wants to do, the next time he's in, a show with Jerry, just him and Jerry. We talked about this last week, which I don't think is a terrible idea, actually. So he wants just those two for a couple hours. So maybe Friday, if he gets his head out of his ass and he gets the right attitude, maybe that will be 6 to 8, and then we'll bring Mark James in or something stupid after that. But does he deserve it? I don't know. Hopefully Wiggy just says, I can do all week.
Right. I think
that's
Wiggy,
the best option.
Wiggy in all week is the best option. I am open to having a Jerry and Reamer show 6 to 8. The concern is there's nobody to pivot away from, you know, immigration or, you know, the LGBT community at any point should they sort of get down that road.
And you're not here either to say,
right,
I think we should move on for this
right
in a drunken tone.
Right, exactly.
All right, what do you expect on today's show? Game 7 is, as you know, Curtis, unpredictable. Anything can happen in a game 7.
The two greatest words in sports are Dale Arnold. The second two greatest words in sports are game 7. So I am jacked and pumped for the conversation.
Everything's going to be all right. That's what Matt Kalman wrote. We spent $1,000 to send him to St. Louis, and that was his column. He just reposted it. Yeah, in an Arch photo. Same column from after game 2 as after game 6. Great job by Kalman, I thought.
Excellent.
Wiggy Week begins in just mere minutes, and hopefully we'll get the open done in time. See ya.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.